One, two, three.
Welcome to Three Song Stories, the place where music and memory are transformed into biography and storytelling. Thanks for listening. I'm Mike Canary. Our guest this week is Michael Owen. Michael was born in Pittsburgh, but moved around while his parents were finishing school. His father was the Lee County Attorney from 1986 through 2010, and his mother is a speech pathologist in the public school system. The majority of his childhood was spent in Boise, Idaho, and that's where he first studied photography. He moved to Fort Myers full-time in 2000 and attended Edison Community College. That's before it became Florida Southwestern State College. He then went on to Florida Gulf Coast University, where he graduated with a BA in English Lit. It was during his time at FGCU that he picked back up with photography. He took a photo course and started working for a local wedding photographer, and it was that combination that helped him realize that he could build a career with photography himself. While finishing his undergrad, his wife started Audrey Snow Photography, and he joined her after graduation and worked with her until 2015 before going back to school at the Academy of Art University in San Francisco to get his master's so he could teach. After grad school, Michael began teaching the Photo 2 course at FGCU and also shot for the Naples Scout Guide for 2 years before joining Marissa Collections in 2017. And now he's moving on from that. He's just accepted a position at Penn State University where he'll be their new brand photographer. And on top of all that, Michael says he's a father to an amazing daughter, stepfather to an amazing son, and a huge lover of ramen.
Hey there, Michael.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for doing this. Thanks for being flexible with the timing, and thanks for doing it before you leave town.
Absolutely. So I'm so glad that you guys could have me in today. Really appreciate it.
So you attended ECC before it was FSW. So it was still being called Edison Community College at that time?
It was, yes, back when Edison State College was a thing.
It was State College at that point.
Right, yeah.
So it was Edison State College, not Edison Community College, because that's what it was before
Correct.
It became
You're right.
State
You're
College.
Right, actually. You're right. Thank
Sorry,
you for
I got to call you back
yeah,
on that.
No, that's okay. It was Community College. Correct.
Because when I went there in like 90, 91, and we used to call it high school with ashtrays.
Right.
Because you knew everybody right. that was there, and they were still smoking allowed in Florida.
Right, yeah.
Anyway, we'll get more into that in a little bit. So your bio says you grew up in Pittsburgh, but primarily really grew up in Boise.
Boise, Idaho, yes. Born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 1981, and then moved to Idaho in 1986.
Okay. Yeah. How would you characterize the musical background of your time in, am I saying it right, Boise?
Boise, yes, with the S, not a Z. it was very interesting. We were very West Coast rock, I think, in the group that I hung out in specifically. We listened to a lot of Deftones, I want to say Korn, stuff like a little bit harder, some ska mixed in there. But it wasn't, there wasn't a lot of East Coast influence.
What's it like to be in Idaho in that time and place? I've never been in Idaho, so I'm at, isn't that where the Napoleon Dynamite thing
yeah,
was?
Yeah, it was, actually. We watched that movie all the time. I'm like, it looks just like where I grew up.
So that is where it was, or at least close to there?
It's a little bit further south. Boise is a little more west than where they filmed the actual film.
But so you grew up in a fairly rural sense?
I grew up in the city, so we were a little bit ahead of everybody else. We actually got a mall the year that I moved there, which was very exciting.
Wow.
Yeah, we all hung out at the mall like you see in the TV shows. It was great. But growing up in Idaho was amazing. We got all the winter sports, snowboarding, skiing, lots of kayaking, canoeing, a lot of outdoor recreation. It was beautiful. I absolutely loved it. And it was a lot smaller than it is today. Boise has grown exponentially since I grew up there. And a lot of people complain about it.
I totally get that. What was being played around the house? Did your folks play music? Were you being exposed to music, at home, grandparents, anything like that?
Not so much with my mom. My parents separated when I was pretty young. She moved out there after the divorce. My dad stayed here. So with my mom, not so much in the house. She listened to a lot of classic oldies in the car, a lot of Amy Grant.
Okay.
Yeah. With my dad, it was a lot more musical influence, a lot of blues, CCR, Tom Petty, Huey Lewis and the News, all that really great stuff. Eric Clapton, you know, classic good blues, rock, that kind of stuff.
What's the earliest musical memory that flashes into your head if you try to go back, even maybe pre-Boise?
Pre-Boise. I think that would be breakdancing to Michael Jackson's Thriller at North Fort Myers High when I was about...
So you did start here go there. When you said he stayed here, I wasn't
right.
sure if we were talking about Pittsburgh or...
They were here together for a short time.
So breakdancing to Michael Jackson at North Fort Myers
right.
High as a little kid.
Yeah, I was entertaining the high school students at their senior prom. My mom had, she was a chaperone, and she brought me along, and I just went on the floor and went for it. I do remember because I love the attention. I thought it was so fun.
Were you already a break dancer?
I thought I was.
Did you have parachute pants?
No, I think they were just regular jeans, but I know I had some Sperry's on, and like a Lacoste shirt or something. My mom loved dressing me up like a little preppy.
Were you living in North Fort Myers when you were here?
No, we actually lived just a little bit south of here off of 41 in a condo.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Musical instruments as a kid?
I tried really hard. I played the saxophone for about 3 years. Never really got good at it. I could only really play Ode to Joy, and that was about it. So no real music. I was more into sports.
What sports?
Everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was a three-letter varsity letterman my senior year. Yeah,
basketball,
soccer, track, football. I didn't play my senior year, but I did play junior year. I was the kicker.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And then I also did debate as well.
Hmm.
So I was pretty busy. Yeah, not a lot of musical playing, but I listened it, you know, before every game, every practice. Music was a huge part of, you know, warm-ups and all that stuff.
Did you have different kinds of warm-up music based on the sport you were playing, or was it always the same sort of stuff?
Yeah, it was very specific to a genre.
Okay.
Yeah, it was very, like, hard rock. Deftones was the biggest one. I'd crank that and just, you know, get hyped up before games and matches or whatever we were doing, and that really set the tone for what was going to happen during that game.
First music you owned, do you remember, like, the first music that you either bought or were, you know, you asked for?
Actually, the first tape, and it was an actual tape I got, was Green Day, Dookie. That was the very first
Tara's
tape
doing
that I got.
This.
And I played it in my yellow Sony Walkman that I almost wore the tape out. I mean, I absolutely love Green Day. It was one of the most mind-blowing genres of music that I had heard up until that point. But the first album I actually bought myself was Offspring, their first release.
Were those the first bands you were super into, or was those were the ones?
Yeah, that kind of set the tone for the rest of like 20 years.
Did you have siblings?
I have one sister, yep.
Older or younger?
She is younger. She's about 8 years younger than me.
Oh, so yeah. Probably too far away that you didn't really influence her. By then, it was a different thing.
Yeah, she had her own genre, and I was down in the basement singing as loud as I could, and they'd come down and laugh at me, her and her friends.
First music you saw live?
It's actually a funny story. First music I saw live was UB40 with my mom in Portland, Oregon. And we saw UB40 because my mom turned 40 and my uncle thought it would be hilarious to buy her tickets to see UB40 on her 40th birthday.
Ah.
So her and I went out to Portland to meet them. And again, I was dancing and having a great time.
Did you know the band? I mean,
not at all.
Did you?
No.
I mean, they had a couple really well-known songs.
Right. And the Gin Blossoms actually opened up for them.
Oh, yeah, were you excited about that?
I had no idea who they were.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no, I was too young to know who they were, but I had a great time. And I got into the band later on, but not at the time. Definitely not.
When did you get your first camera?
Oh, geez. There is a picture of me when I was 2 holding I think it's a single flash camera that I use on some of my profile pictures. So I think that was the very, very first camera. I was about 2 years old. And then I got my first real camera from my dad my junior year of high school, 1996, when he saw that I started getting really serious about it.
So that would have been a film camera.
It was. Yeah, it was a Canon Rebel. Mm-hmm. So one of the lower end, but I shot that thing like crazy. I still have it. It's one of my favorite cameras. Still use it.
How much did you shoot film before digital came along? And we'll get more into this in a little bit.
But yeah, for sure.
I just want to lay the groundwork here.
Yeah, of course. I shot film up until about 2000 and I want to say 8.
Okay, so quite a while.
Yeah, for a long time.
You stuck it out.
I did, yeah. I was one of the last remnants of the film age, and I actually worked in a dark room and all that stuff.
Cool.
I know I don't look it, but, you know, I'm older than I look.
Yeah.
And, the film, I still shoot film to this day. Over the years, I've collected some of the cameras I coveted when I was younger, so I get to play around with those now, and it's a lot of fun.
That's very cool. Yeah, you could do one of those, like, 21 Jump Street things.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do your first song.
Nice. So the first song that I chose is one of the early memories that I had of being in Florida with my dad. And, you know, there's moments when you're a kid that you just kind of sticks in your head, and this is one of them. And it was me driving up to Pittsburgh to go live with my mom, and he just played Neil Diamond over and over. And the only song that stuck in my head from that whole album was America. And to me, it really resonated because we were literally driving through America, seeing, you know, the landscape. And when I hear the song, it resonates so much with me because I can see the hills. I, you know, we'd stop, I'd play in the grass, and it's a very visceral feeling for me. You know, I kind of get choked up talking about it, but it's just a really powerful memory. I know you guys asked for those types of songs that have those sort of connections with them, and that's the strongest one that I have. From being little, I mean, I was only probably like 5 or 6. Mm. And it just really, really, really stuck with me all my entire life. Yeah, I mean, when it builds up, boy, it hits hard.
Yeah. This is it's off the movie The Jazz Singer,
right?
Which came out many years after that. Did
right.
you see that movie?
No, I haven't actually seen it.
Okay.
And what's funny is I had to call my dad to verify that that was the album that he
yeah.
kept playing, because I knew that was the song, but I couldn't remember what album it was on. And he told me, yeah, the movie had just come out, and I bought the soundtrack, and we listened to it.
Oh, the movie's that old.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, yeah. He bought the soundtrack and just played it the whole way up there.
So that was just his jam at the time.
It was, yeah. Neil Diamond and, I forget the other singer. I think it was another country singer. I forget his name at this point in time, but
do you remember what kind of car you would have been
in? It was a U-Haul.
A U-Haul truck?
Yep.
With
yep.
a tape deck.
Bucket seat. We both sat in the front. Back when you could do that, you can't really stick 5-year-olds in a bucket seat nowadays up front. But yeah, we sat in the U-Haul and trucked it the whole way up there.
Well, let's imagine that, watching you look out the window.
Beautiful.
At the world flying by, America flying by. This is America by Neil Diamond off the Jazz Singer album. This is Michael Owen's first song on this week's episode of Three Song Stories.
It was an interesting moment because I didn't really understand what was happening at the time.
I was going to ask.
Yeah. And it was just a fun trip that we were taking. And it didn't really sink in until later what was actually going down. So I was trying to just remember the fun that we were having in that truck. Because I knew it was a heavy moment for him.
Yeah.
But he made it fun.
I can relate. My parents divorced when I was about 5, and then we moved to Florida.
Mm.
So,
yeah.
But, you know, that's the strength of a father.
Yeah.
You know? Made it fun.
Made it fun.
When did you put that 2 and 2 together with that song? Like, how much longer into your life did you remember that song through a more grown-up lens?
Probably when I had my own daughter.
It was not till that much longer?
Yeah.
Wow.
I didn't really realize, like you were saying, the power of a father is, you know, keeping things light, you know, not showing the struggle or whatever's going on. Just, you know, let's have some fun, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't think I put the 2 and 2 together until she was born. And then I was like, oh, I get it.
When we asked you to do this show, was that an obvious song or did you have to kind of dig back to that?
No, that was 100% obvious. That was going to be my first song.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that was a very strong memory for me. And when I heard about this show, I always thought if I was on this show, that's the one that I would go to first.
And yeah. Here you are.
Yeah. That's what I love about the concept of the show, and I was so excited to do it because, I don't know, it's like music is so, it's almost smelling grandmother's cookies, you know? You hear that song and automatically you're right back where you were. Mm-hmm. And you don't remember anything else about being that age, but man, that moment sticks in.
You said you asked your dad if that was the album that it was on.
Yeah.
Did he offer you any behind the scenes of his side of that story, or did you just leave it at that?
Not too much. We don't talk about it a lot.
Yeah.
It was a heavy moment for everybody.
Yeah.
And I think he's just, you know, we're happy to just be where we are now. Everything's great. Everybody's happy. We're all doing our own thing. And, you know, life worked out the way it was probably supposed to.
Yep.
And, you know, that was important for me, was, you know, getting that out there.
Well, let's move on to some lighter things.
Yeah.
Assuming that your high school years weren't horrible, what was high school like for you? You said you were a sports guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Were you doing photography during high school? Did you do any other kind of art?
Yeah, I was. I definitely did photography. I started my freshman year of high school, and I did it all 4 years, which was great. Again, working in an actual dark room.
So they had actually you could take photography for 4 years, not part of some other like media class. It
right.
was like photography.
Yeah, it was an actual photography class, and it had prereqs, excuse me. So you had to take it, you know, at least 2 years before you could take the upper level classes. And then once I had done that, I actually, you know, just kept doing it. I never really stopped. But as far as like other stuff in high school, I wasn't the best student. I was more focused on athletics, where I did excel and I had to make up for it later, which we'll come back to, which is why I went to ECC for the first 2 years to get my grades back up.
Songs from high school years, dances, any musical memories embedded into that time for you?
Yeah, I think every dance that I went to, they played Vanilla Ice. I mean, every single
sure.
one. Yeah.
Just did you do any break dancing?
Not there, no. I learned at that point that I was not a break dancer, and I did not do that anymore. It was mostly just a lot of jumping.
Right. You remember a first slow dance or an early slow dance?
Not really. I mostly went with a lot of friends.
Yeah.
That was kind of the thing. I think I went maybe with one or two girls that I was seeing, but nothing too serious. So, no, not a lot of slow dance memories there. Unfortunately.
Did you do any, was it CDs by then?
CDs, yeah.
CDs. Did you mix CDs is what
oh,
I'm
yeah.
getting at.
And I had a side hustle in high school burning and selling CDs.
Were they mixes?
Oh, yeah.
Was this like the early days of LimeWire and
yes.
Napster and all
yep,
that?
Yep. I would take requests from the students and then I would go back to the house and mix them up on the computer there and then take them back to school and sell them.
Well, I would have been doing it if that was then.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah. It wasn't very lucrative, but, you know, it was fun.
What about mixing CDs for somebody who you wanted to, you know, either for yourself or somebody who you wanted to impress with your musical tastes or
oh, yeah.
impress upon them?
Definitely did that.
A hidden message within a series of songs.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely did that. A lot with my wife, actually. We exchange mixtapes today, like not actual tapes, but on Apple, we make them for each other. It's a lot of fun doing that with her, and I lag behind her in sending songs. She's a lot better at it than I am, so she's always getting on and be like, "You haven't updated my playlist lately."
Is it a matter of trying to expose to new music that's coming out, or just songs that you come across and you're like, "I want to put this in your brain"?
Yes. Yeah, it's definitely the latter. She hears a song and she's like, "This made me think of you." And that's why she's always getting on me, like, "You're not thinking of me as much." But definitely, yeah, when I send a song to her, it's definitely because it resonated with our relationship or where we are, or where we came from. Yeah.
You did a bunch of sports in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Were you hoping to go on to play sports in college?
If it had come up, I would have, but I wasn't really pursuing it. Mm-hmm. Post high school, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. So from that standpoint, you know, it was just one of those things. I kind of went where the wind took me.
Which is where?
Here. Right after high school, I flew right to Florida.
And your dad was still here?
Yeah. He's stayed here. He was the county attorney for...
Oh, yeah. I saw that.
About almost 30 years. He was the assistant county attorney, and they moved up to county attorney. So he stayed here, did the Florida prepaid program. Hmm. So I got to go to ECC and FGCU, which was great. That was post-high school. I moved here and just stayed here the whole time. Been here for 23 years.
You got your degree in English Lit?
Right.
Why?
I thought that I wanted to be an attorney.
Is that a path toward attorney?
Yeah, apparently it is. Huh. For some people. not for me. I realized that there are people that were way more passionate about that stuff than I was. And that's kind of nice. That was a nice thing about going through that program is I kind of figured out that that's not something that I wanted to do. And actually during my time at FGCU is when I took the job with a local photographer as an assistant photographer. And then I was managing her studio as well. And I realized that you can make a living as a photographer. And I had never thought of that. I had always thought that, oh, photography will just be something fun that I'll do as a hobby. And I'll have my real job and then I'll, you know, do photography in my free time. And then FGCU started a photography program here. And I think it was the first class that they offered, the first year that I actually took it with James Greco. And again, I married the two and realized, you know, this is my career path. This is it. Because I was as passionate about photography as those other students were about English Lit.
Right. Yeah. Your dad was a county attorney for many years before that, probably. You don't just like graduate
right,
and become
right,
a
yeah,
county attorney.
Right.
You know, what did he think of you pursuing photography?
Oh, 100% supportive.
Oh,
both,
cool.
Yeah, both my parents. My mom is a huge artist. She does every facet of art that you can think of. Kind of come from that comes from her side. My dad was 100% supportive of all of that. So there was no hesitation. He was like, go do it. That's why he bought me the camera. Like, I see that you have a passion for it. Very supportive.
Do you remember an image, and I know it's probably impossible to think of the first one, but an early image that you got where you were like, I think I know what I'm doing here?
God, I still probably not.
Yeah.
To this day, I'm still working on it.
But did you feel like you had a handle on the DSLR the first time you got it and started playing around with the light meter and knowing the, you know, setting the aperture and the f-stop and everything? Did it come easy to you? Because that's there's a whole mental thing going
right.
on there.
Yeah, and it was not easy. It was one of those hurdles that I had to really overcome because I had – what I thought was the artistic side of it, but you have to learn that technical side.
Yeah. Back then you did.
Yeah.
Now you kind of like jump right past it, sort of.
Right. Yeah.
But you'd be better off if you didn't.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot less of the technical stuff now with the LED screens in the back. The technical stuff came later. That's something I had to really work on. And I would say I've kind of gotten to a point where I've gotten really good lately within the last 6 years working at Marissa Collections. That was like going back to school, actually. Mm-hmm. It was very fast-paced, a lot of different type of shooting, a lot of demands as far as lighting and composition and that kind of thing. So, yeah, it took a while to get good, I think. In the early days, I think I thought I was good, but other people may have disagreed.
Sure. That's how life works.
Right.
You're going to look at yourself in 10 years and go, you didn't know nothing,
right.
Michael.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What were you doing? Yeah.
Any musical memories associated with your time at Edison and or FGCU? Did you, see bands around town?
Not too much, actually. I was pretty busy working at the YMCA and going to college.
At the YMCA doing
what? Yeah, I worked at Lee County YMCA as a aftercare counselor.
Oh.
And I taught.
Which one?
Lee County YMCA.
But where is that?
It's over off of Royal Palm and McGregor.
Oh, yeah. By the Alliance.
Right. Yeah,
yeah,
right across the street.
Okay.
Yep, exactly.
You were one of those people that were marching kids back and forth into
me.
The field.
Yep, I checked them off the bus. That was me. I was standing out there. Yep. I was pretty busy doing that stuff. So there were not a lot of music influences there. There was a pretty big gap where I kind of separated from music a little bit.
You went off to the West Coast for your MFA.
Correct. I did that remotely, the school that I went to.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you didn't, like, smell the sourdough.
Yeah, no, unfortunately. I was only out there for graduation. My wife would let me go 3 years out there.
Well, that makes sense. I was trying to put the pieces together bio.
Yeah, that would have been tough. We had a relatively young child at the time, so there was no way that was going to happen. So I had to find a school that was... that you could do it remotely, and that was the best one that I could find.
What's it called? I didn't write it down.
It's the Academy of Art University out in San Francisco.
Cool. How does that work, being a photographer doing a remote class? You're not necessarily writing papers. You're probably shooting and getting feedback on what you're shooting.
For sure. It was a lot of both, actually. We did a lot of papers, actually.
Oh, yeah.
It was...
Especially because you're kind of on a track to be a teacher at that point.
Right, I was, yeah. Right. The objective was to teach here at FGCU. It's an interesting process because all the feedback you're getting is, it's done through the computer. So you're not seeing a face-to-face critique of your work. It's just, here's some suggestions, not more of, pointing to something or, something like that where you can kind of get a visualization of what they want. So that was kind of a challenge doing it remotely. It was an interesting process.
When was the last time you were in a dark room?
Oh, goodness. Probably high school.
So it's been a long time.
Yeah.
Do you still shoot film ever?
I do, yeah. I have it developed here locally.
That place down south off 41?
Creative Photo.
Yeah.
Yep. D3. That's my man.
It's like the only place in town that'll do it
anymore. Yep, exactly. I was just there this week. It's funny enough, my mom found a camera that was my grandfather's that still had a roll of film in it from the 60s. And I left it in D3's hands, so hopefully we get some good stuff.
Was it fully shot, or did you shoot a few rolls of those?
No, it was fully shot. So it should be interesting to see if anything comes out.
I shot on film for many years, and I pulled out one of my old DSLRs about 3 or 4 years ago, and I put a roll of 36 black and white in it.
Okay.
And I would shoot one shot during a moment, and I stretched it out over 2 years.
Oh,
so
wow.
So when I got the roll back.
Yeah.
It was 2 years worth of memories.
Wow.
And I've got another one now that I'm about a third of the way through.
Oh, that's
my
amazing.
New little project.
That's super cool.
You know, you just like a time capsule.
Right.
You're like, oh, that's when we were at the flea market for Christmas.
Right. Oh, that's so fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did something similar where while I was in school at AAU, I started a project called One Camera Project. And I got the inspiration actually from hearing a story here on NPR where – they would send a guitar to different musicians and they would compose a song on that guitar.
Yeah, yeah.
And I took that idea and adapted it and bought a Holga camera, which is like $15. It's a medium format plastic camera that is notoriously bad for light leaks and just, camera or lens distortion. And I sent it to people all over the country to use.
Oh, cool.
And they would send it back with the film that, that they had shot. And I developed that and created a whole collage of their images into one big image.
That's very cool.
Yeah, it was pretty neat. Unfortunately, I didn't get to use it for school, but it was still pretty neat.
My first camera, and we're nerding out now. We'll get to your second
song. Well, I heard you were a photographer.
Yeah. My first camera was a friend of mine gave it to me when I first started shooting. I had one of those Advantixes, and I was like really into it. And so he gave me his dad's old Yashica TL Super, which he had bought during the Korean War.
Yeah.
And I took it down to Harman, and they were like, oh, it's got light leaks, and the light meter didn't work.
Right.
And he's like, they were like, throw it away. And I shot like 2,000 rolls of film through it with no light meter.
Oh,
so, man,
gosh.
My brain worked out the math. But I went on a road trip out west, and literally like on my second day, I went to take a picture and I heard this horrible clinking sound. And I opened it up and the mirror had fallen off.
Oh, no.
But it didn't break.
Right,
so I
went
to the store. I bought super glue. I glued it back on. It wasn't on perfectly. It was kind of cockeyed.
Right.
Which meant then from then on, and I still have the camera, if I aimed it at a bright light source, it would create a rainbow.
Oh, that is so
cool. And in that old SLR, I could see what I saw in the – in the eye was what would be on film. So I could literally put rainbows into shots on purpose.
That's amazing.
And I was like, I win.
Yeah. Well, there's you put a patent on that.
Yeah, exactly. But that was the old time. I would get them developed at Walgreens back then.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
well, I remember going to Harman too. That was a big thing back when I was younger as well.
Okay, well, we could talk forever about cameras, but we're not going to.
Let's do your what we're here for.
Let's do your Rusted Root song now.
Okay, perfect. Yes. So this song was something that we would play when we were hanging out on our front porch of our house that we bought in 2009. And we play it every time we're out on that porch. And every time I hear it now, I just think of being in Florida on our house, or sitting on our porch at our house with the family gathered around a game of Uno, hanging out, laughing, maybe a few drinks. And just with the all four of us sitting on the porch having a great time. And I can't go anywhere now and hear that song and not think about that moment or those moments.
I'm trying to figure out where you were in 2009. That was 14 years ago. Was this, you were already married at this point?
Yes. We got married 2010.
But this is your wife you're sitting with.
Yes. She was my fiance
again,
at the time.
Right. 21 Jump Street. Yeah. I'm like, was he really married 14 years ago?
Yeah. We'll be celebrating our 14th year in the house, which we're getting ready to sell. And that, again, that's the memory that I want, is to have that moment, because I remember pulling up to that house when we were looking at homes in Florida to buy, and both of us wanted to live off McGregor. And our realtor, Denny Sharma, shout out, showed us two houses, and the house that we ended up buying was the second house. Because the second I saw it, I was like, that's the house that we have to have. It was built in 1925. It's almost 100 years old. It's got tons of problems, but we love it to death. It's hard to let go of that house.
I bet.
And yeah, again, when I
think, you've been in it since then.
Correct. Yeah, that's the only house we've lived in. This is the only house my daughter has been in. We brought her home in this house. And yeah, it's just those fun memories of hearing this song hanging out on the front porch. Like, literally, those are the best moments that I could think of living here.
You got to go out on that porch and listen to this song before you head to Philadelphia.
Absolutely.
Or to Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Definitely.
And this song is just one of those songs that has so much, I don't know.
It's so fun.
It just has so much feel in it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I've heard the song in ages, and I guarantee you, as soon as you start playing it, I'm going to be like, oh, yeah.
And I have no idea what they're saying.
Oh, of course not. I don't even know if they know.
Right.
Well, should we listen to it? Imagining you on the porch.
That would be wonderful. Thank
you. All right.
You.
This is Send Me On My Way by Rusted Root from their album When I Woke. It's Michael Owen's second song here on Three Song Stories. This is Biography Through Music.
Yeah, what do you say?
I smell patchouli when I hear.
Yeah, big time. Yeah, it's hard to put into words how many good memories we have listening to that song. I mean, it was just lots of laughs. It was a lot of fun.
Does your wife know that you are sharing that song for this, or will this come as a surprise as she listens to it now?
I had to run it by the whole family because there are a bunch of songs we listened on that porch, but that was the one that we all agreed on.
What were some of the other ones that may have risen close to the top?
I forced them all to listen to Kurt Vile albums.
Oh, okay.
So there was a lot of Kurt Vile because it really had a nice mellow tone to it. A lot of Stick Figure. You know, a lot of reggae hanging out on the front porch or doing drives out to Captiva. We always listen to reggae.
So you finish your English lit degree.
Yes.
At FGCU. Had your wife started the photography business by then?
Yeah, she started it in 2008, okay. I believe, if I'm right.
So quite a while then.
Yeah. And right when she started it, I was still working for the other studio, and then I transitioned over to working with her. And after that, we went ham.
Break up the pie of what that photography business is. It, you know, it's portraits, weddings, commercial.
Sure. We really didn't start doing commercial work until later on. We mainly focused on weddings at the time. Mm-hmm. And at the time, we really focused on shooting up in Sarasota, Tampa, some down in Naples, and it was great. I mean, we really got a really wide range of venues and vendors that we worked with, and we did that for about 10 years.
So and you shot a lot of weddings.
We did, yeah. I can't even count.
And you'd shoot them in tandem, so you guys would have your assignments and kind of
yes.
be on all the angles and everything.
And it was a lot of fun. We had a guest who I knew pretty well at a wedding one time come up and tell us, he's like, it's amazing to watch you guys shoot. It's like watching
a
dance.
I get it.
Yeah.
Biggest disaster that you've experienced at a wedding, not from your end.
Sure.
From their end, and then we'll get to your end.
Unfortunately, I don't have a lot of really bad stories.
No.
I know most of the weddings that we shot were flawless.
Oh.
I think one of the, maybe the saddest thing, I don't know if I should.
Just something that pops into your head. You can sterilize it if you need to, or, you know, don't say something you don't want to
sure,
say.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, I don't really have any good stories on that. they were really just a lot of fun.
Yeah. What about, I mean, on your end, there's technical challenges. There's moments that can be missed. There's data that needs to be preserved. Have
sure.
you always pulled that all off, or have you ever had any scares?
We had one scare. We had a lost SD card one time. That was it. But we recovered it. Everything was fine.
Where was it?
In my pants pocket.
Oh. You just didn't expect it to be there.
No.
I shot a few weddings back in the day on film, and that's a nightmare.
It is. Yeah.
That's
I
a
never
nightmare.
Did that. I never
because
did
Because then
that.
You got to either have a ton of cameras or be really good at putting that next roll of film in.
Right. Yeah. So when I started, the photographer that the studio that I worked with, she shot weddings for a very long time. And my wife actually worked for the same studio. As her assistant, before I started, she moved up to being another photographer there. But she remembers the bag being about 300 pounds mm-hmm. in 90-degree weather and, you know, just shadowing the photographer's every footstep, you know, right behind her just in case batteries die or roller films burn up. You know, it's, a lot of work.
When was the last time you shot a wedding?
I'd say about 4 weeks ago.
Oh, okay. So you're still there.
Mostly as a favor to another photographer friend of mine.
Understood.
He's a Tampa-based photographer, Jamal, and he likes me to shoot with him. I love shooting with him, so I agreed to do it, and we had a great time up in Tampa.
And when did you start working for the person or the company whose name is on my hat that I can't see without taking it off?
Marissa Collections.
Marissa Collections. When did that come around?
I started with them in 2017.
Okay.
August 17th, 2017. And I've been there ever since.
Explain the scope of what that is, because you're leaving that soon.
Right. Yeah. Tomorrow is my last day, actually. Yeah. It's kind of sad. like I said, it was a great place to work. I really feel like I gained a ton of real-world experience working
Explain
there.
What it is to our listeners who don't know.
Sure. So Marissa Collections is a small retailer. They sell fine fashion. It's a boutique down there. It's pretty well-known, big pink building. But the job entails me photographing all of their ready-to-wear on models that come into the studio. We'll photograph them, and then I'll also shoot a lot of their ad campaigns as well.
And so you have they have a studio?
They do, yeah. We have an in-house studio, and that's changed a lot since I started. Obviously, you know, technology changes, and we move things around, but it's been a lot of fun to see it grow and change since I started. We've really come leaps and bounds. When I first started there were four of us working in the web department, and now there's, I think, close to eight.
Wow.
Which is, it's pretty impressive to see the growth.
And you're moving up to Pennsylvania because you're going to become the James Greco of Penn State. Is that
right.
it?
Yep. Shout out to James.
Is that about right?
Yeah.
That's kind of 100%. What he does here.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That's exactly
Talk about an arc.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he was the inspiration for me to pursue it. Before I actually took the interview, I called him up and got his impression of what the job would be if I did pursue it, and he was excited to talk to me and have that conversation. So big thank you to James for that, because he gave me the courage to move forward with that, and you know, got the job, and the family's going to move up to Pennsylvania State College and work at Penn State.
James, if you're listening, you're still invited to this show.
Well, he's one of my recommendations.
Okay, well, you'll be like the third or fourth. He's kind of dodged us.
Is he really? Oh, that's so funny. Well, he's a big music guy, so I know you should get him in here.
What are your thoughts on we have the large language models, the AI, the generative AI, I forget what it's called, but you can make images that are photorealistic of certain things from scratch now.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on that in terms of how it's going to impact, especially like product photography,
sure.
stock images? I need a doctor sitting at a table with a,
Right.
That's all like a few key clicks away now.
It is very interesting to see where it's going with photography. I think right now we're at a point where it's just blending the two. I don't think right now companies are that interested in generating 100% AI-driven images. We've actually experimented with incorporating AI into the images themselves. So, we'll clip out the model and then render a background. You know, we want to put her in Paris, or we want to put her in New York, or, you know, some location we can't easily get to. We'll use it for that purposes. But other than that, I'm not too worried about it yet.
Right.
I don't think it can replace creativity. I think, you know, right now it's just pulling from what exists already. A lot of photographers have their own style that they shoot in, and their own creative touches that I don't think can be quite duplicated yet. So I'm not too worried about my job yet.
Yeah. And especially, I mean, what you're going to be doing up there,
right,
is probably a pretty safe niche for now.
For now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely think so.
You must know your way around Photoshop pretty well.
Yeah. Pretty sure.
Have you seen the new generative fill thing that it does?
That's what we were using just last month.
It's crazy.
It's terrifying.
You know, you used to be able to like cheat a little bit of this over to
right,
here.
Right.
Now you can just throw in something and say, fill out the rest.
Right, right.
Give me 10 variations.
Yeah.
That one looks best.
Right. It's kind of fun too, though.
Yeah.
I do like playing around with it. I haven't actually gotten into it too much just because I haven't had a lot of time yet. It's still relatively new. But it has been a lot of fun to mess around with the times that I have.
It's sure.
It's just really fascinating to see what they can do now.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
And I've been the tech guy for the Fort Myers Film Festival, and they did a filmmaker panel this year, and they talked about AI and film and filmmaking. And they were all very poo-pooing it as far as, oh, you know, this is an art. Well, not, you know, this will never. And I wanted to say, and this is the analogy I'll use with you, I feel like what we have now is like a 0.5 megapixel digital camera. And saying to a filmmaker, you think we're ever going to be able to use that to make a film? You know,
right.
Because if you would have asked a filmmaker or a photographer who shot on film if digital is ever going to be able to replace film, they would have all laughed you out of the building.
Right.
And now we've come that far.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to imagine what that means for this technology if it's expanded that much.
Well, yeah, definitely. I mean, just the resolution in cameras now is exceptional.
Well, you can shoot feature films on a digital device,
iPhone,
would have been crazy in the 70s.
To think of, yeah.
You know?
No, it's unbelievable. Yeah, definitely. It's been really fun to see. I'm one of those people who was sort of hesitant to adopt digital. I thought it was cheating.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to think about shooting what we shoot professionally with a film camera now. It's too expensive. It's too antiquated. It's too slow.
You're just out on a limb.
Yeah.
In a way.
Definitely.
You know, I had this weird sweet spot where I was shooting on my Yashica, developing it at Walgreens, and I had an early version of like Photoshop 5.
Uh-huh.
So I'd scan it in and then I'd do some levels tweaks,
right.
Which would just make it look better.
Yeah.
In
definitely.
A way that you couldn't really get. I wasn't like going crazy.
Right.
I was just doing a little bit of smudging.
Yeah.
And then I'd print them up and these photographers were like, what are you doing?
Yeah, you add a little bit of contrast,
I had that weird little middle point where digital wasn't good enough yet. Film guys weren't using that yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so I made a name for myself for a time doing that.
I remember trying to remove telephone lines from a photo that I took on my first digital camera of lightning. And there were, you know, power lines in the background. And I couldn't figure out where the clone stamp tool was. I was like, there has to be a way to remove these.
And now you could just literally type in, remove phone lines.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, before we get to your third song, let's talk about concerts.
Yes.
You've been to a lot of concerts in your life?
Probably not more than an average person,
mm-hmm.
But I do really enjoy concerts. I've tried to hit up as many as I can. I don't particularly like large venues. I try to hit the smaller venues, like up in Tampa, they have the Ritz,
mm-hmm.
Which is a lot of fun. The venue that they have up in Orlando, House of Blues,
mm-hmm.
which is a lot of fun.
Been there.
Yeah, we do some small local concerts and shows, some of the bigger places that come through. And I feel like you're trying to get to the next story.
No, is the next story concert related?
Yeah.
Oh, see, I don't know that. I have to feel my way through it. Before we get to your third song, like peak concert experience of your life.
So if we could.
Is it the third song?
It is. Yeah. If you want to segue into that, we can. But
let's do it.
Yeah. All
okay.
right. All right. So this one's fun. Since we started heavy, we'll end light.
Okay.
The funnest concert I have ever been to was Langerado in 2008. I believe it was 2008. They played out in the Seminole field out there. They had rented it out. It was going to be a three-day festival.
Like down where the casino is, kind of?
Correct, yeah, yeah. Somewhere out there. And there was one day where the BC Boys, 311, Modest Yahoo, REM, Ben Folds 5, all these major bands were going to be playing this one specific day. And my fiance, now wife at the time, wanted to just go. We were going to do one day. That was it. That's all we had. And when we got there, there was a traffic jam because somebody had crashed into a telephone pole and nobody could get in. I mean, the bands were still playing because there were people there, but we couldn't get in. So we just broke out into an all-out tailgate party with everybody's cars. You know, everybody brought their own drinks. There was a gas station right there. Everybody's running in.
How far are you from the gate from getting in?
Oh, probably like half a mile.
Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty deep in there. And we all just got out, hung out. My wife is way more extroverted than I am, and she kind of dragged me along. And it's one of those situations where I ended up having a ton of fun, where otherwise I would have just sat in the car by myself if she hadn't been there and waited the whole thing out. And being there with her in that moment, early on in our relationship, I just knew this is the person that I was going to be with the rest of my life. I was like, she's perfect. She made me have a great, amazing experience that could have been a disaster. We missed all the major bands.
Did you get in at some point?
We did. Yeah, it opened up. We managed to get in. And in the chaos of this whole, there's probably like 500 people trying to get in at this point. Somehow we ended up in the artist's parking lot. I don't know how it happened. There wasn't anybody directing traffic or anything. And we just pulled into the first parking lot that was open. And it was where all the artists were parked. We could see their buses. We didn't know that's what it was. And we started walking towards what we thought, you know, was this, you know, general admission. And we just started walking past the artists. And we walked right past Ben Folds.
Did you look over and you're like,
yeah, well, yeah, I nudged my wife. I was like, where the artists are. So I ran back to the car, grabbed the camera. I was like, hey guys, let's do a photo. So we took the picture of them and then kept wandering, and Modest Yahoo's playing. And we just, you know, got in with the press and hung out and watched.
Cause you had your camera too. Which
right.
Gave you a little bit of credibility.
I grabbed the biggest lens I had at the time. Yeah. And, we watched Modest Yahoo perform from the press pit. And it was the greatest experience of my life to a concert. It was so much fun.
Huh.
And we hung out the whole time just going around taking pictures of artists.
Did you kind of stay into that in that realm? Did you like ever out yourselves as not supposed to be there? Did anybody ever kick you out?
We got busted towards the end of Modest Yahoo's set. I think they realized what had happened and they started kicking everybody out. But we were there for almost the whole show.
Wow.
Which was a lot of fun. After that, though, I did manage to do it the right way. And I would reach out to the tour managers ahead of time to get permission to shoot concerts later on. So I did still get that same experience, but nothing beat like getting in there by accident. That was a lot of fun.
Why this song?
It was the first one that was playing when we snuck in.
Yeah?
Yeah, it was playing, and we still listen to it today, and that's the memory that we have. It's just having a ton of fun sneaking in, getting in to see the artists, and walking up as Modest Yahoo's starting to perform that song. It was unbelievable. Ton of fun.
Like a magical moment.
It was, yeah. It was just one of those things that felt like it was kind of supposed to happen.
Yeah. Well, it's, yeah, yeah. Let's listen to it.
Awesome.
Michael Owen's final song today on Three Song Stories is King Without a Crown by Modest Yahoo off the album Live at Stubbs.
Beautiful.
Still have those picks on a hard drive somewhere?
I do. Yeah, I do. And they're amazing.
Can you share one with us? We can share it with your
yeah, absolutely.
Your episode comes
yeah,
out.
I'll dig it out
yeah.
for sure. I might have to dig deep, but I'll get it.
Do you archive well?
I do. Yeah, I try to best I can. With the technology the way it is, it makes me nervous having things on hard drive because, mm-hmm. you know, they fail a lot now. We don't print as much as we used to, so
yeah
it's definitely scary, but you know, with the cloud and it kind of helps, but you know.
Sort of.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, let's hope.
Right, right, yeah.
I actually have, over the years, I've moved all my stuff from one hard drive, and I always have a second.
Yep.
And then when I you know, after a few years, I'll get a bigger one, and I keep moving it along, and there's always a double. And
right.
I've got everything in the cloud, too.
Yeah, the bulk of what we're going to be moving is hard drives.
Yeah,
it's
I bet.
Tons and tons of hard drives, yeah.
Hmm. Do you and your wife's musical tastes align?
I'd say they cross paths.
Okay.
I would say that, you know, she definitely listens to a little bit more like Lilith Fair style stuff.
Okay.
She's really into Tori Amos.
Arms of an Angel.
Yeah, yeah. Tori Amos. But she has influenced my taste. She's definitely introduced me to some of the stuff that she loves that I actually do like, you know, and vice versa. I've gotten her into some of my music, but I try to keep it tame.
Any places where she'll say, Michael, turn it off. Or you'll say, what's your name?
Audrey.
Audrey, turn it off. Are there any places where you totally diverge?
Where we totally diverge? I don't think I would tell her to turn her music off.
Right.
Yeah. No, I don't think I'd do that.
Too much gentle.
Right. She might tell me to turn it down, but I think she's the same way. We're pretty respectful of each other's music time, for sure.
And your daughter's how old?
She's 12. She just turned 12.
She got her own musical taste at this point. That's around the time start to really – especially YouTube with the kids these days.
Yeah. We got her own phone reluctantly, and she is already loaded up with her own music. It's incredible. It's a new song or two every day. Hmm. It's incredible. She'll just sit and listen to music for hours.
Anything that she's that you've picked up on because of her, or is she in her own head buds and so you're not even sure?
Yeah. She has a – good taste in music, though, I can tell. I've accidentally heard some of her music, and it's pretty good. It's very mellow.
Huh.
Yeah. It's kind of very, like, very chill. I think she likes to be relaxed and chilled out.
It's interesting how that works.
Well, it's funny because I was the complete opposite.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Okay. We're going to do a speed round.
Okay.
But first.
All right.
Your bio ends with that you're a huge ramen lover.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Richard Chinqui.
Okay.
Who maker of the show with us. He also is a huge ramen lover.
Nice.
So he wasn't able to be here.
Oh, no. Okay.
But we've got a little conversation with Richard we're going to play out here. So
okay.
Let's start this up, Tara.
Hey, Michael. This is Richard Chinqui. I just wanted to know, I heard you're into ramen.
Yes.
I just wanted to know, are you a tonkatsu guy or are you a shoyu guy?
You know, it's really embarrassing. I don't know what either of those are. I'm going to be totally honest. I just love a good place that has good ramen. Wherever we travel to, we try to find a ramen spot and we just go seek it out and try it out. Most of the ramen I eat is from Publix, the majority of the time. Some of the local restaurants we hit up pretty frequently, like Ichi Togarashi on 5th Street. That's a new place that opened up that has amazing ramen. And I don't know what they call it. It's just really spicy and delicious. So maybe you can teach me some more about what the different ramens are.
Mm. Ah, yeah. I go back and forth. At home, I make shoyu, but when I go to a restaurant, it's almost always tonkatsu. I haven't committed the 20-hour boil, you know, for bones yet, but I'm definitely going to. I wanted to ask if you've ever been to either Ippudo or Ivan Ramen in New York.
I have not, no. We've hit some Korean barbecue restaurants, but not any ramen joints, unfortunately.
They are both absolutely worth your time. Some people listen to the show in New York, so if you can hear this, go down to the Lower East Side, go to Ivan Ramen, go to Ippudo, have a good time. Final ramen question. What is a non-traditional ingredient that you either put in your ramen or would put in your ramen?
Non-traditional. I'm very traditionalist when it comes to ramen. I don't get too adventurous. The one thing I would say about the ramen that I love is that I like it really spicy. And when I'm saying really spicy, I mean not Thai hot, but like how the makers of it would make it for themselves. So yeah, very, very, very hot.
Like a triple Thai hot sort of a situation.
Yes, and with extra spice on the side. Yeah.
How do you feel about the ramen egg? Because the ramen egg, I think, is really what adds that extra depth to ramen for sure.
Yes, if it doesn't come with the soft-boiled egg, it has to be soft-boiled, I'm leaving. I'm out.
All right, Richard. Thanks for joining us remotely.
Thanks, Richard.
Thanks for ramen talk.
Okay, speed round. You ready?
Yes.
Do you have a nickname that stuck over the course of your life you'd be willing to share?
No.
Okay, we'll just leave it at that. When was the last time you purchased music that had physical form?
2 weeks ago, I picked up the new Queens of the Stone Age physical vinyl album from Joe's downtown. He held on to a limited edition red vinyl album for me. That was the last one I got.
So you'll be traveling to Penn State with albums and hard drives.
Albums and hard drives, yes. Yeah, we have a pretty big album collection at home.
Are you taking a U-Haul?
No, actually, we hired an outside company, not doing it ourselves.
Karaoke?
Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah?
Yes, big time.
What would be your go-tos?
Are You Gonna Be My Girl by Jet? And I know this is everybody's go-to, but it's a great song to sing, is Creep by Radiohead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you let it fly.
Oh, yeah. Once in a while, if I'm feeling brave, I will do House of the Rising Sun by The Animals.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. If you were a championship wrestler, what music would you enter to?
Ooh, that's good. Probably a Metallica song. That's hard to think of on the spot. Man. I'm not speedy enough for that.
I always thought
Enter Sandman
Tolls would be a good
yeah
intro
that's a good
for
one too
or a theme song
yeah.
from Metallica or even like Ride the Lightning just because of how those kick and start off. I think
right.
that would be perfect.
Okay, I'm gonna adopt that.
What would your wrestler name, or would it be the same as your nickname that you're not going to admit to?
Yeah, definitely. Because I had a nickname, but I'm not saying it.
That'll work. What activities or pursuits make you lose track of time the most?
Photography.
Yeah.
And I know that's
cliche. Shooting or editing or all?
Both.
Yeah.
I get in trouble a lot when I'm on shoots, both shooting and I tend to take too much time editing. I'll put the headphones on and I go for it.
This is going to be a random question for some listeners, but you may know this. Do you know Vilty?
I don't.
You don't know Vilty?
Okay. Sorry.
Sorry.
Now I feel bad. You look so disappointed.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know John Robb, so I was thinking you might know Vilty.
Okay.
John, if you're listening, John, you know. Song you wish you could hear again for the first time ever?
First time ever. 100%. Rage Against the Machine. Killing in the Name of. I remember the first time where I was when I heard that. I was in a Hastings in Boise, Idaho, and that literally just blew my mind. And I wish I could get that feeling back. It was incredible.
Any albums that hit you that way that you'd like to hear again for the first time?
Angels and Airwaves. I think it was not Travis Barker. It was the guitarist from Blink-182. He branched off and did an Angels and Airwaves album. And again, it just, the whole album was amazing from beginning to end. I mean, it was incredible. And I mean, to this day, I don't think I can get through a whole album and feel the same way I did that when I heard that entire album from beginning to end. It was really great.
Yeah, that's Tom DeLonge. Yeah.
Okay, Tom DeLonge, yeah.
They're on tour right now, and
yeah.
So many people are absolutely freaking out about that sort of reunion tour going on.
It's funny because I'm not a Blink-182 fan, but I liked that album. Yeah.
They also had, there was a band, Boxcar Racer, I think it was Tom DeLonge and maybe Mark Hoppus too, that had a whole, an album that came out that was very, very emo. I was pretty into it back in the day too.
Oh, nice. Very cool.
If you could broadcast a song into the head of every human simultaneously, which would it be?
Again, I should have prepared for this. I've listened to the show enough. I should know. Any song off the top of my head. Well, I don't want to be you two and put a song on everybody's iPhone. Sorry, this isn't very speedy.
That's okay.
We Are the World by Michael Jackson.
Okay. That would work.
Okay.
And it wasn't by him. It was by all those
folks. Of them. Yeah.
Yeah. We had one of our guests, a photographer, Kinfei Marotti. Do you know Kinfei at all?
I don't.
He shot for the News Press forever. Now he shoots for nonprofits around town. And
yeah,
he
yeah.
did one of his songs was We Are the World.
Okay.
You do have albums, so you do still listen to albums. Other than on vinyl, do you listen to records? I mean, albums, do you, or is it piecemeal and playlists?
Oh, yeah, no, I definitely listen to entire albums, beginning to end. Okay. Yeah, that's, I mean, that's how I grew up listening to it. And I still think it's important to do that sometimes.
A lot of people left that behind, but I still do. I still have like albums of MP3s on my phone from those days.
Yeah. One of my favorite ones listening to beginning to end is Black Rebel Motorcycle Club. Hmm. All of their albums are great beginning to end.
What would your 14-year-old self think of who you are here with us today? Not doing sports ball.
Yeah, sports ball. I think he would be pretty happy with where life went. It turned out okay.
Hmm. Any advice you'd want to send him back?
Study harder in high school. So you're not playing catch up.
It doesn't go down on your permanent record,
right.
But it matters.
But it matters, yeah. For sure.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay, it's time for you to recommend your three people. You already mentioned James is going to be one of them.
Yeah, well, he has to now. I mean, absolutely. The other one I'd like to recommend is Matt Steves. I don't know if you know Matt. He's another photographer in town, but he's also a musician. Very cool guy. I think he'd be really interesting to listen to because, you know, he's played all over Fort Myers as well. And then the other person would be Krista Kowalczyk. She was the photographer I first worked for, wedding photographer that I worked for in town. And she recently started this project where she is restoring photos that got damaged in the Hurricane Ian.
Ah.
And she was recently on the Kelly Clarkson show where they interviewed her. And I know she loves music as well. So I think she'd be really interested
to
speak
with. That sounds
great.
We may want to talk to her over on the news side of things.
Maybe.
Too.
Yeah. She'd be a good person to talk with.
Well, Michael, it's been a pleasure getting to
know
you.
Oh, this has been so much fun. Thank you.
Thank you for reaching out to us. Other listeners, just so you know, Michael reached out to us and here he is. So it's not impossible if anybody wants to propose somebody, including themselves. Any final thoughts you want to leave us with before you head off to Pennsylvania?
We had to squeeze it in before I left town. So this was really important for me, and I really appreciate you hosting this. Thank you so much. You guys do a great job.
Thank you for doing it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
For this week's Parting Tune, we're going back a year to episode number 232, guest Kiara Roman. It's one of our teen editions. Her second song was Wonderwall by Oasis, which she says she and her friend group had grown to sort of like ironically. Her second song was about when they were on a school trip to Disney and it was her birthday, and they were late returning to the bus at the end of a super long day.
So we were like running like across the entire like Hollywood Studios like campus.
Full speeds, like sprinting across the Disney park.
Like feet like probably bleeding, like running to the bus. And we were like all like cranky and tired. It was like maybe like 10 or something. I don't remember what our curfew was. But we went to the bus and I was like, oh my gosh, guys, we forgot to do my birthday song or whatever. And I was like, wait, wouldn't it be so funny if you guys sang Wonderwall instead of Happy Birthday? And then they did. And I was like, wait, can we ask the whole bus if they can sing Wonderwall for me? And we did. But like it was really funny because it was like the underclassmen and then us, and everybody had to like pull up Wonderwall lyrics on their phone. And everybody was like, wait, no, let me pull it up. And then they all like just sang Wonderwall for me.
Quick note before we go, we're going to be taking the show on the road next month. We'll be on stage in the Foltz Theater at the Alliance for the Arts in Fort Myers on Saturday, September 16th. Our guest will be Terry Tencher. He's been part of the Fort Myers art scene for decades as a gallery owner, art dealer, and all-around supporter of the arts and all-around good guy. So mark your calendar for Saturday, September 16th if you'd like to come see us make the show in person. We make Three Song Stories in the studios of WGCU Public Radio on the campus of Florida Gulf Coast University in Fort Myers, Florida. Richard Chinqui is co-creator and producer. Tara Callaghan is host and online content producer. Our production assistant is Jared the Intern Gonzalez. Chris Duffus is executive producer. And our theme song was created by Dave Cowan and Stick Martin at Monkey House Studio in St. Pete. Keep listening.